Coming up on this bonus episode of the podcast Under the Stairs, I bring you an exclusive interview with Ewan Cant from Arrow Video. But before that, ladies and gentlemen, this is year four, and you know what that means. This time, it's war.
Warning, the podcast Under the Stairs is not safe for work. We'll feature movie spoilers and language which most listeners may find offensive. Brought to you in conjunction with Legion Podcast Network. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs.
Everyone, and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is a very special bonus episode. I am your host, Duncan McLeish, and welcome to the show. Right, on this very special bonus episode, I will be bringing you the interview that I conducted almost a week ago. I recorded this interview on Sunday night. Those that follow the Facebook group page for the podcast Under the Stairs, facebook.com/groups/tpuckscast, will know that I got a chance to sit down with former guest Ewan Cant from Arrow Video. Ewan is one of those guys that just works tirelessly behind the scenes in Arrow, particularly acquiring titles and then working on the point of not only securing the title for release, but right through to the very end, essentially when we get it in our hands. He's been behind some of the fantastic releases that have put out in recent memory, but he is heavily involved with what's coming up. And there's a ton of amazing things that Arrow have announced in the last 6 months since he was on the show. A lot of them have robbed my wallet of money and will probably continue to rob my wallet of money. So it was great having Ewan come back on the show. I met him in Glasgow. I met him in a Costa Coffee, which is like the British equivalent of Starbucks. And as a result, it's quite noisy, so you will hear the noise of coffee machines in the background, a little bit of chatter, and some horrible, horrible coffee shop music. I do apologise for that. But the audio for the interview actually turned out quite well, considering it was two guys sitting, having a coffee with an iPhone, and just chatting over the top of it. I think it turned out quite well, so hopefully you enjoy that interview. We discussed so much stuff to do with what has been announced recently through Arrow Video, as well as kind of talking about some of the processes, the kind of the pros and cons of the distribution model as it stands just now, as well as Fright Fest in Glasgow 2017. Now, whilst I didn't attend, Ewan was there representing Arrow. They were putting on the Phantasm 4K restoration because they're putting it out in this country, but they brought it up to the big screen. So he talks to us a little bit about that festival and some of the highlights of the movies that he really enjoyed that were running during the festival time. Speaking of Fright Fest, I got the fantastic opportunity to finally meet and sit down in a certain pub in Glasgow called the Solid Rock Cafe. It's like one of my favourite pubs in Glasgow, with the Boz from the Little Pod of Horrors, who was up to take part in Fright Fest up in Glasgow, and we met up. And whilst it was only a kind of fleeting visit, it was fantastic to finally meet Boz, a guy that I've been chatting to online now for almost 2 years, so it was a ton of fun. Great guy, lovely guy. You've heard him on this show before. He's been a guest a couple of times, and if you're not listening to his show, please go across and show some love to the Little Pod of Horrors. It's a great show. And their Facebook group page is brilliant as well. Lee's always posting videos of his instant reactions to films as and when he sees them, and he sees a lot of horror movies at the cinema, so it's a great little page to follow, so go across and show them some love. Quick update on the posters. We have sold, I think to date, 8 posters. I may be wrong, it might be more by the time this episode drops, you can never tell. And we had, by the point of this being released, put out a live stream video of signing those posters, and there's still plenty of posters there if you want to buy one. So essentially, if you want to buy one, get in touch with us, podcastunderthestairs@gmail.com. Check out the instructions on our Facebook group page. I've already told you how to get over there. It's facebook.com/groups/tpodcast, or check the show notes for this episode, which will tell you how to purchase them, how much it costs to ship them over to where you are, and if you want to take part, if you didn't buy that year 2 poster, the Void poster, how you can take part in getting a little special deal on a combo poster release. I think we sold a couple of them, actually. Some people that are new listeners to the group that had not had the opportunity of checking out or purchasing that previous year's poster, or they're doubling up with some of that fantastic Joshua Kelly artwork. So yeah, that's a quick update for that. Right, that's enough of me talking. I'm going to take my first break of the show. When I return, you're going to hear the interview that I conducted with Ewan Kant from Arrow Video. But first, promos for shows that I love. I'll be right back right after this.
Hello?
Hello. Who is this?
Who are you trying to reach?
I don't know.
I think you've got the wrong number.
Do I?
I'm gonna hang up.
Wait, don't hang up. What's that noise?
Popcorn?
You're making popcorn?
Uh-huh.
I only eat popcorn when I listen to podcasts.
I'm about to listen to a podcast.
Oh, really? Which one?
Probably the podcast on Haunted Hill.
Is that the one with the two guys with the beards?
Yeah, Dan and Gav. Most episodes, they look at two different horror movies. Each episode, they look at a world of the strange, where they look at weird things from around the world. Sometimes, they even do special episodes where they look at different genres or directors' discographies and talk about them.
Do you have a boyfriend?
Maybe.
So where can I find the podcast on Haunted Hill?
Well, you can go to legionpodcast.com, Facebook, Twitter, or just go into iTunes and search for the podcast on Haunted Hill. So, are you going to ask me out?
Do you desire to add yet another entry in the endless legion of film review podcasts to your playlist? Can you not stand the thought of having any moment of your dull, pointless waking life intruded upon with the sounds from the real world, and would prefer to listen to a small cast of assholes talk about movies? Then
they must be destroyed on sight!
Probably meets your bare minimum requirements. Join Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest hosts as they talk about films from every genre, ranging from the obscure and schlocky to the well-known top-dollar classics. Look for
They Must Be Destroyed on Sight
on iTunes, Podbean, YouTube, and Facebook. That's
They Must Be Destroyed on Sight.
Talk about a bit of Fright Fest, because you've obviously... You've seen, like Arrow's involvement with Fright Fest, if you can talk about that. And then just, there's been about a million titles that you've put out, which, I think the last time I spoke to you, which was August last year, I think I said to you, it'd be really cool if you put out House, and you were like, oh yeah. You're kind of like aloof about everything, you were like, maybe one day.
I do quite a good poker face. / poker voice. So,
Have a clue at all.
I have to do that all the time because, often people are asking about stuff that, inevitably, would be, not inevitably, but...
There's stuff on your radar anyway, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
There won't be many titles someone saying, Arrow should really put out this that you haven't really...
There's I think someone has mentioned pretty much every title there is out there, so it's difficult because you want to because they're excited about a release, or the idea of a release, you want to just kind of like burst out and say, yeah, we're doing it, but you have to kind of keep that in check because, then there would be no surprises left, so.
I said as well, I think the last time we spoke, I had said that you had come off what I would have said was probably the biggest year in terms of your releases. I mean, I thought there was more mainstream titles in your 2016, I think, like, 2015 to 16 slate than I'd seen before. Mm. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because that inevitably will happen anyway. You kind of transfer over and capture some of the bigger horror titles as and when they go on. But this year alone, I mean, what, I think we're announced up to April or May, and yeah. May, it's yeah. huge. It's huge because not only do we have PCs coming out, which was a big highlight for me, like huge highlight for me, but the fact that House is coming out like as a box set with all four films, the Phantasm box set, which was much rumoured, but the fact that that's finally confirmed and that's coming out as well. These are like big titles, like in horror circles anyway, from the 80s. Mm. These are like, Phantasm is one of those ones that's much beloved by fans. House, once again, even the sequels, very beloved by fans. Has that been stuff that's been working in the background for a long time that's finally paying off, or is the reputation of the company such now that these battles to get titles are easier?
Well, in these particular, to pick up on Phantasm and House, in those particular instances, those have actually been kind of in the works for, you know, I think Phantasm, I think maybe we'd been talking to Don Coscarelli for probably the best part of 4 or 5 years.
Right.
I think House has been a long time in the works as well, dealing, talking with Sean S. Cunningham. He owns them for the UK.
Oh, right, I didn't
know that. Yeah, which is why we can do 1 to 4 in the UK, but in the US we're doing 1 and 2 because the horror show, aka House 3, is MGM. So, it would have been a bit messy to do one. You know, we could have done 1, 2, and 4 in the US, but it would have been a bit messy. So, we've been talking with Sean Cunningham for quite a few years about House as well. So, you know, I mean, that's not to say that as Arrow has kind of grown in prominence, that that has opened doors to other stuff.
Yeah.
I couldn't give you a title like example off the top of my head, but you know, I definitely, because I kind of do work on the acquisition side as well, definitely like talking to rights holders and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, oh, you know, I'm familiar with Arrow and what you guys do, so I definitely like to work with you guys. And I think that's probably come more with like the US expansion and kind of, you know, definitely more visibility.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly for the stuff that I am kind of more concerned with acquiring, which is like the US horror stuff, which is my, my area of greatest enthusiasm, I guess. So, I think, you know, for those particular titles, they've been in the works for a long time, and you know, a lot of the titles have been. You know, being worked on, tinkered on for a long time.
For a while,
since,
yeah.
You know, some of the acquisitions I've done have been 2-3 year journeys, maybe. So, you know.
Satisfying to see them cross.
Yeah, yeah, very satisfying, yeah. You just got to be very tenacious and bloody minded about stuff and just have to be, you know, just really want to see certain films out on Blu-ray, which is, you know, when I'm chasing after a film, it's as much gift for myself for fans, you know, certainly how the Mutilator came about, because I just wanted to own it for so long, and so just, you know, found myself in a position where I could actually do something about it.
Move towards it. Through your contacts, like for example, you say you're having conversations with Sean Cunningham about acquiring rights to put out House. Does conversations at that level then open up to, oh, well, I have House, I also have these titles that you might want to look at? Or is it more a case of you have to find out who's responsible and it's very much just focused in on that title? Or does that open up? I was thinking more about like Joe Dante, for example, when you guys put out The Burbs.
Yeah.
And then like we've seen Matinee come out since then. Is that a through-line conversation that you have with people like that as well, where it's like, you could do this film and, oh, by the way, I also have this film and this film which I would like to see on Blu-ray. Is that something you'd be interested in? Is that how that sort of thing works?
It could work a number of ways, really. I mean, to talk about the Joe Dante example, I think Burbs is definitely universal, I think Matinee might be Universal. I might have that wrong. That might be MGM.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think both were like titles that we've probably, you know, been keen on for a long time. And I think when we did Verbs, we were in touch with Joe Dante. He contributed some stuff to the release. Mm-hmm. So, you know, probably...
probably laid the foundations for kind of like, oh well, you know, we should definitely do Matinee now. Yeah. But those are both studio titles, and you know, those it's not, you know, studios have their own way about going about things, and so, you know, doesn't necessarily mean that if you get one title you get the other. Or yeah, I mean, there's been instances where, you know, I've like been looking for one film and found the person who owns that film, but also a bunch of other stuff, or yep, like catalogues and stuff like that. So it can happen that way. Mm. Yeah, I mean, with studios, I personally haven't really done any acquisitions on like dealing with studios.
Yeah,
but you know, they're obviously a bit more complicated in terms of.
It's about to ask if it's easier dealing with the.
Well, you can't. The way I understand it, anyway, you know, and I could be wrong, but it doesn't seem that you can just decide, you know, I want these films, you know, or that if, you know, that you can just get it by putting in a really good offer, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. They have their own internal machinations and, you know.
Legal teams and.
Yeah, yeah. And, that, you know, they. For example. You know, you might have. I've heard on the grapevine that kind of like for like big horror titles that with studios, there's a better time in the year to ask for them,
which is
after Halloween,
mm-hmm,
when you know they're off their radar, so sort of thing. You know, but when you know at a time when they're kind of leading up to Halloween, you know they're looking to, you know, like put it in promotion, put a film in promotion,
yeah,
and stuff like that. So you got less of a chance, mm-hmm, to like, you know, to be able to kind of
snatch
that.
It.
And you know, it depends what they've got going on. Sometimes they might have some sort of plan, you know, like some sort of DVD or Blu-ray release, you know, not like a big special edition, but so yeah. But I tend to just deal with individuals, and seems like it's kind of an easier, not always, but
yeah,
you know, you don't have that whole kind of corporate studio framework, mm, kind of in the way, you know, you're kind of dealing with individuals.
So. Yeah. In terms of, because like I said, since the last time we spoke, there have been so many titles come out.
I think, last time we spoke was pre Herschel Gordon Lewis.
That's right. I was about 4 days before, and as much as I wanted you to tell me, and you were like, no, I really can't. I was like, just stop the recorder here. I'll send you a check. You
can give me a
check. Yeah. But I mean, that box, I opted for the limited edition one.
Shock and Gold.
Yes. Yeah. And oh, dear God almighty, is that. I mean, that, I would say, as box sets go, and this is a geek in me coming out here, I would say, as box sets go, it's probably the most niche, but at the same time, completely over the top, very much like the filmmaker himself, most over the top box set.
I'm glad you said that, because that was the whole, certainly my whole thinking behind it. You know, if we're going to do something like this, you know, the Herschel Gordon Lewis universe is just so rich in just inspiration to do just wacky things.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't really think of any other kind of filmmaker whose work kind of really would let you just go nuts like that.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was also, I mean, I just kind of, you know, I was kind of allowed to kind of run a bit wild with it, and kind of like, yeah, let's do a paperback and a vinyl and
fake eyeball. That was a bit where I've like, my wife tolerates quite a lot of my purchases at the best of times.
Yeah,
and like when I'm like, the reason I opted for this is because you get the booklet, and this is a hardback book and all the rest.
Yeah,
the eyes did roll in the back of the head when I took the fake eyeball. I was like, it even included a fake eyeball. And she's like, you're
different coloured irises. I think there was four.
Was there? I didn't know that.
I think there was four in total, maybe, yeah. They're all handmade. We had a bit of a drama with getting the eyeballs done, actually. I think the original supplier stopped making them, so then we actually had to source. We got in touch with kind of like a friend of one of our colleagues who worked in special effects, and just so we're just lucky enough that he was able to jump on it and kind of set about manufacturing 1,000 eyeballs. And I think we did like a little piece on our blog, actually. It shows photos through the process, so we were getting these regular photo updates of box, you know, buckets of like eyeballs, and you know, like pre, you know, like here's the optic nerves and stuff, and so it's cool. So yeah,
so like you can see in the case of that one where something pops up, which is unanticipated in terms of this is just a prop to go on with the films. Is it really, from your point of view, is it really just kind of stressful up until the point it actually leaves the door then? Like, is, I mean, is it, you know, it's not just
it's
a case
stressful,
of...
It's stressful when it comes back in the door. yeah, stuff arrives at the office and, you know, like you got your first finished copies and I find it really difficult actually to ever be happy, you know, yeah. Like with anything, I just kind of look back and think, you know, oh, I wish I'd been able to do that or do this or, you know. So, yeah, I don't know, there's only a few where I kind of really can have made my peace with it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I suppose that's like what
part and parcel
makes us want to do, like, yeah. You know, the best every time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a painful birthing process. And stuff will come in, and you know, people be like desperate to open the boxes and show it around, and I'll just kind of I need to like take a quiet moment just to go and look at it, and you know, inevitably find something that I, you know, wish I'd fixed or you know added or something. But you know, there comes a point where you just have to. Let it out into the world.
Yeah,
so, you know.
I think that's, they say that with most creative endeavours in general, if you are the artist and the person responsible for that, you're never really going to be 100% happy. And when you are happy, I mean, like, if there are certain things that Arrow have released, especially in the last year, which have floored me in terms of, like, as a collector who's been collecting from just after the white slipcases kind of stopped doing their runs, right through, to see the evolution of the releases, and in particular, I think when the line that keeps coming out just now is that physical media is dying out. You know, people are going digital. To see any company spend a bit more time getting a bit more creative or attention to detail to give someone who is a fan of a movie or just a cinephile in general, something which feels like there's love, care and attention put into it, I think is a huge deal. And I think it's something that the company has continued to do very, very well. I think that's what I'm never surprised with is the level of quality just standard. And then when you get the additional releases on top of that, whether it's the newly announced 4K Phenomena box set. Now, that's, you know, like, if you'd asked me when I bought the first one, would I ever imagine that a 4K restoration, more stuff could be put out there? I would have probably said no. I would have said, this is probably the right level for a movie like this.
Yeah.
And then it comes along and I'm like, well, I need to own that. Of course I need to own that. And I've just bought the Synapse one as well. But I'll have the Arrow one as well. I mean, now that things are moving 4K, is there much of a hunger within the company to look at titles that you've already done 2K restorations for to bring up to 4K, or is it more a case of if there's an opportunity, if we see the right movie or there was a particularly popular title we know from the past, we would do that? As you know, 4K is being pushed as the next level really of digital.
Yeah,
physical media, but that doesn't necessarily mean that everything should be 4K. What's the kind of view, or your view, maybe less Arrow's view?
It's less about you know, should you upgrade something from 2K to 4K, and more like, is there a better source material available?
Yep.
So, for example, if we did something from a print, you know, because that's all we could find at the time. In 2K, you know, kind of standard, and then suddenly the negative turns up, you know, a year or so later, and there's a big enough following for that film, then that's kind of, I think that's kind of a no-brainer.
Do you follow trends in other countries then, in terms of releases? For example, if a particular title was released in America, not through Arrow in America, and it did very well, is that likely to change the way you would release something in the UK? So, for example, if a standard release was being planned, a title got released in America through a different label and there was a rabid response for it, would that opt you to make it a bigger release, try and pack more content, or is it a case of you always try and pack as much content as possible, it's just some titles have more content to allow you to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we always aim to make it the most comprehensive package possible. I mean, I'd be lying if I said we didn't look at what other companies do, and especially if, you know, we're in the fortunate position of releasing something after them, and, you know, sure, of course we would look and see what they've done, and think, you know, just as a reference in terms of what we might be able to do different or add upon. In terms of like the response to stuff, not so much. I mean, some stuff like Phenomena and things like that, you know, like, you know the fan base already, so it's kind of a proven thing, and it's kind of rare now that we're doing just UK stuff, unless it's... Yeah, I mean, so like Phenomena is something that's we've already done before, and it'll be big enough to justify us doing it.
Been enough time as well. I mean, it's not as if it's like the following year there's a 4K drop, and Phenomena's been it for a couple of years now through Arrow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in this occasion it was being restored by Bologna, so which incidentally is a newer transfer than Synapse one, just to put that second point in there. Yeah, that's being restored at almost is finished being restored at Bologna. So
seems to be a huge uptake, and it's funny. Like horror seems to go through seasons in terms of important directors or genre directors like getting a bit more attention kind of flung at them after a while. And Argento seems to be one of them. Argento at the moment is, even though he's not done anything since Dracula, there seems to be a bit of a push. And like, I know that there's currently a lot of work in Italy just now with 4K restorations of things like Suspiria.
Yeah.
There seems to be a bit more attention being paid there again, and that to me is a great thing, that, you know, audiences are still not just interested but passionate about seeing a director of that stature's work, whether you like him or you don't like him. He's a very important voice in European horror cinema. It's like at one point, you know, basically a rock star of the genre. And the company is also moving and doing some more stuff from Romero, which I'm incredibly excited about, because back in the day that was like original kind of stomping ground for Arrow, was, you know, it was like the masters of horror, so to speak. There is one particular title which has eluded me, and I feel that I need to put you on the spot while recording. Feel free to tell me to fuck off. It'll be fine. Martin.
Yes.
Now, that came out as a DVD.
Yeah.
Never made its way to a Blu-ray. Is that a rights issue? Is that a print issue? Is there any degree of certainty with a percentage that you could put that would ever be revisited by Arrow somewhere down the line?
I mean, I think I've heard it mentioned elsewhere in other conversations, so probably isn't much of a revelation to say that the rights are with the producer, and you know, we've released it before. You know, we've got more Romero coming up. It's, you know, to my mind, one of his best films, and obviously we'd love to, you know, revisit it, especially because it hasn't had any sort of a Blu-ray, and it's just a case of being able to come to an agreement.
Is there a time limit on how, like, for example, you'll do X amount of prints of Martin? Is that you have to forgive my like lack of knowledge of the industry in this capacity, is that a we have the rights to distribute this for a set period of time, or we have the rights to distribute this film in a certain amount of numbers?
No, you license for like a period of time. Like 7 years, 10 years, 12 years.
So by gaining the rights to do something in DVD from that print, that doesn't necessarily allow you the rights to do a Blu-ray if technology changes within the licensing period. So if you had it for 7 years, you put it on DVD, and then 4 years into that, you then have access, well, it'd be a different supplier then, wouldn't it, for prints? Is that how that works?
Once you've licensed a film, as long as you've got it in your license period, unless there's some particular stipulation otherwise, most of our agreements will say any kind of home media format currently known, or that will be be developed. So that's the kind of wording. So in the case of Martin, we simply don't have the rights anymore.
Just
the rights
have lapsed.
If we did, we would definitely be doing a Blu-ray release. How that would come about, whether the licensor would be restoring themselves or whether we decided to pay for restoration ourselves, depend on the circumstances.
So you are currently, I will change tact, I'll relax with the geeky questions, but you've been up in Glasgow for Glasgow Fright Fest.
Yes.
2017.
Yeah, I've been coming to Glasgow Fright Fest since 2010.
Oh, excellent.
Coming to the London one since 2005, I think. Mm-hmm. So Wolf Creek was my first ever Fright Fest.
Oh, right.
In London at the, I think it was the Odeon.
Yep.
And I've been going to that every year since then, and Glasgow, with the exception of 1 year, I've been coming since 2010. I think I came originally to, I think in a previous life I was kind of writing articles, and I think I was covering Tim Sullivan's 2001 Maniacs Field of Screams. I think he was presenting it here, so
right,
I think
right, yeah.
That was kind of the premise for coming up, but it's obviously enjoyed coming to the Glasgow one. I've got my family from Scotland as well, so
we
had something of like a home base here as well, so
you were bringing Arrow as a company, we're bringing up Phantasm.
Yeah.
4K restoration. That played at Fright Fest, didn't it, in London? Is that right? Or did it get
No, I played at the London Film Festival.
What, right.
Yeah.
I played out there, and so you brought up for. It was in the first night as well, wasn't it? It played.
Fright Fest?
Yeah, it was.
About 11:30. Unfortunately, a 10-hour drive precluded me from seeing it, unfortunately. Although, to be fair, I have seen it quite a lot recently. So,
yeah. is that. Once again, going back to geeky question, how do those, is that a case of you have a good working relationship with the guys at Fright Fest, and as and when you have the ability to put something out which is in a format, like new 4K for example, is it difficult to get film festivals to put movies on that one? I know Phantasm's a no-brainer because it's a huge title. But there must be a few titles as a company that you've restored that you're about to release around festival times that you would like to put out to cinema audiences. Is it difficult, or is it more it just makes sense to do something like Phantasm because it's Phantasm?
Yeah, we've got like a relationship with Fright Fest. We sponsor the August event in London, have an Arrow screen, so. Throughout the year we're constantly in communication, and it's good for us to get film shown, and they come to us and say what have you got at the moment. Obviously it has to be something that's been newly restored, so there's kind of a reason to show it. So it's normally a case of they will come to us and ask what we have, and throw out some ideas. So it's very much like two-way kind of thing. In terms of like other festivals, we have relationships with the other film festivals as well. Abattoir, if I can give a quick shout out to them, it's one of my favourite festivals in the UK. I've been going there the last maybe 3-4 years. We go up and, you know, we have a stall and, you know, we don't always show films of ours, but, you know, we'll tell them what's coming up and, you know, it's always a good opportunity to show something of ours. I think we showed Deep Red at Abattoir a couple of years ago when we were doing the new 4K. And yeah, we do a bunch of other festivals as well, so it's kind of a two-way process.
As an audience member and not as an Arrow employee, was there any movies at this particular Fright Fest that stood out to you?
I mean, this is going to sound like a put on, but Hounds of Love, which will be released through Arrow. It's an Australian kind of serial killer thriller.
Oh, excellent.
That showed last night. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really, really interesting film. Fairly harrowing. I felt like I needed, a few hours of sitcoms after it. But that was really good. It was really affecting. I think, all joking aside, I think that was probably my pick from the festival. It's quite good. There was quite a strong lineup in general, though. Bloodlands, which is kind of from the director of The Horseman. Sort of Albanian set, supernatural come kind of family drama. The new Chris Smith film Detour was good. Mm-hmm. Guilty pleasure of the festival, I guess, would be Cage Dive.
Yes.
I say guilty. It's not even that much guilt, to be honest. I think like some people might view
it as
that.
It's going through. I think there's about 3 or 4 different names for this movie now, depending on where it's released. 47 Meters Down is how I'd heard of it.
That's a different film. Is it another Cage related
film? So that's
film.
Not the same
no,
film.
That's a different
oh
film.
My god! Right. So
I think in that film, for a start, that film's not found footage, and I think they're actually stuck in the cage when it
under
gets,
the water. Yeah.
Which I actually thought was going to be the case here. There's no spoilers, but it's not. But it starts with a cage dive.
And did you say it's found footage?
Found footage, yeah.
Because it's a genre that it can surprise me because I tend to...
I mean, I've
gone with low expectations.
It's got everything against it. It's a shark movie, which shouldn't be a precursor to badness. But, yeah. I mean, I'm all about the rubbery shark movies, the Jaws sequels, Great White, even Tintarera to an extent, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm not into my sci-fi channel kind of...
not a Sharknado fan, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I like my shark films to be just the right level of unbelievable.
So
it was, shark film and fan footage. Naturally, you're going to go in with fairly low expectations. I wouldn't say it's an incredible one, but it was, it was for what it was. I thought it was well done.
And, you sold it to me. I didn't know. I thought it was other films.
No. I mean, it's got the usual found footage issues. The kind of the American, kind of couples. Kind of smooching it to the camera, and and then. There's some particularly heinous kind of travel log footage you get to start to pad it out.
All right.
And then we go through the usual rigmarole of the whole, just stop filming, all right? Stop filming. And then they carry on filming, That's like the classic thing. So there is all of that classic found footage stuff. But the shark stuff is well handled, I'm a sucker for that kind of things.
Yeah.
So, I even enjoyed The Shallows quite a lot, even though I was really dismayed to find out it was all going to be CGI shot.
It was the last 15 minutes of The Shallows for me, and it went a bit too preposterous.
The ending was took the biscuit. I mean, that's when she was hanging on to the what was that thing? She was hanging on to the,
it's like a buoy or something like that.
Anyway, she was out on this thing in the middle of the sea, and then she somehow timed it so it kind of... It was just...
It's just
there was this hero shot when she was kind of being dragged along this rope, kind of down to the ocean floor or something. And didn't the shark follow her and get skewered on something?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
I didn't feel like that was necessary. I thought, like, up until then, it was all quite...
It was played very serious up to that point. Even the friendship with the seagull was played fairly serious up until that point. But then it was explained to me that the Jaws movies, of which I also have a bit of affinity for, they tend to get a bit ridiculous, the way they get rid of the shark. So I could kind of see that. Maybe that is the way you finish a shark movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, either way, like, you know, I thought it was a good time was had by all.
You were mentioning that movie, which I was putting out, the Australian one.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting continent for horror just now. Like, see the last, see the last, Australia and New Zealand, the last maybe 3 years, my top 10 lists have had like a smatter of these movies, whether it be something like Housebound, Babadook, What We Do in the Shadows. You know, these movies have started working their way through. Wormwood was another like really, really fun movie. They do all tend to have, like the Australian ones in particular, and it's funny you mentioned the name is escaping me now, the one with the killer, what's his name, Mick?
Wolf Creek.
Yeah. They do tend to have a fairly bleak... A fairly bleak way of telling stories. Most of them tend to have a very gritty nature to them, and I don't know if that's necessarily just the culture of how they make cinema over there for that genre. In terms of that movie getting put out, how does, because Arrow acquired We Are the Flesh, which was a movie I absolutely adored. I can see why certain people have been a bit kind of, I don't know how to handle this movie.
That's why it works great. Is I mean, the idea behind that was, you know, it's quite a statement for a label that Arrow Video has historically been what we'd call catalogue films, you know, non-new release. So really, you know, it's quite a statement to be like, okay, we're putting the Arrow Video name to this new release film. It really has to be something that's, you know, sets itself apart, something that's gonna push buttons and gonna be divisive.
I think as well, watching it, the first thing that kind of cropped through my head is this is a future cult movie. You know,
I think that's like the whole rationale behind like Arrow Video doing new release stuff. You know, it has to be stuff, as you say, that feels like it's gonna have future cult classic status. I feel like that about Hounds of Love for sure, and a few comments I heard from the screening afterwards said exactly that kind of thing.
Is there a time scale for when that's due out? Can you tell me? Is that still under
later in the year?
Later in the year. Say no more.
But yeah, definitely wants to check out.
Very interested. There was another one that was announced, and I can't remember. I may be completely talking about my arse here. the Ghoul, is Arrow doing that one? No. Have I? If you can't tell me, you can't tell me.
Pass. I'm not actually sure.
I saw something. I just can't remember if it was Arrow's name that was assigned to. I think it's a Canadian movie that's been doing the festivals just now. In terms of acquiring those sort of movies, is that off the back of festival screenings?
I think with like new release stuff, it's more film markets and festivals. I'm not sure where We Are the Flesh was picked up. Might have even been Toronto, something like that. But yeah, that's where you pick up most of that stuff. But maybe filmmakers, you know, we get quite a lot of submissions directly as well. One of those ways.
We mentioned earlier on that obviously Arrow, and this is something that happened a while ago, but Arrow expanded into the American market, and one of my listeners actually asked for questions, and he gave me a lot of questions. Some of them I was like that, you will answer those questions, and then other ones I was like that, you're not going to get an answer to those questions.
I could give an answer, but it might be evasive.
The Arrow brand in America has like you said before, it's very much what's coming out in the UK is coming out in America, except for certain titles where there are issues maybe in terms of distributor. I would imagine it's probably the big reason why certain titles are released in the UK and not in America, or vice versa. It'll be down to whoever owns the movie in that territory. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like The Burning, well, that was actually owned by different persons in the US, you know, but if we could have released both territories, but something like The Burning's big enough. Howling 2's already been out in the US. That's generally it, because there's already a release out there, it's already under license.
Yeah. So, in terms of, like, over in the UK, we have a certain amount of operators that are specialising in cult and horror and exploitation cinema. In America, there are a lot of operators.
Yeah.
In that water just now, putting out that I can think of maybe off the top of my head about 7 or 8 companies out with Arrow.
Yeah.
How much of a challenge does that pose? As a company trying to acquire things, does it become like a bidding war with certain companies without naming names? Or is it, I have noticed that you still very much went down the road with whether it's Japanese cinema, for example, or Italian cinema, which gets some love from certain labels but aren't exactly pushed from certain labels in America.
Yeah.
How is that market compared to the UK, where you could argue, and I think you'd probably argue rightly, it's like Arrow's probably at the top of that that pile just now. How difficult is it in America, really?
In terms of competition
for titles, and just the fact that you're dealing with more distributors who are putting out content in varying degrees of quality.
Well, I mean, conversely, really, the US expansion into the US has just completely opened up things for us.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we would have maybe... we certainly wouldn't have done a Blood Rage when we were just in UK. I think it would have been hard to justify the expense of restoring that all and, you know, just for the UK market. Whereas, you know, so... as far as my experience goes, it's only opened up the opportunity. That it's not, you know.
I never actually thought of that.
There's, you know, American Horror Project, probably been a bit too niche, you know, just and obviously it's, you know, kind of resonates probably quite a lot with the, you know, the US fans as well. So, I mean, it's really, as far as I can see, opened up opportunities rather than,
like,
you know,
creating hurdles.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say there hasn't been titles that I've personally gone after and then it's gone elsewhere. You know, I was really keen to do Hide and Go Shriek. I mean, I'm a big 80s slasher fan.
Yeah.
As I've probably said over and over again. So I did try and get that. Unfortunately, it didn't come off for whatever reason. So, yeah, so there is, you know. But it can only be a good thing, really, you know, that there's demand for these films. Otherwise, the other way, it could go the other way and no one's interested, and no one wants to see The Mutilator on Blu-ray or Hide and Go Shriek or...
No, that was an experience, actually. The Mutilator was one of those mythical entries which I'd never seen, and then having the opportunity to see it on Blu-ray kind of blew my mind, but I'm not going to lie. We may have had this discussion before the last time you were on. It was an experience and a half, one that I wasn't ready for. I was just like, how does this film exist? It's just like, how does this film exist and how do I now own it on Blu-ray?
Well, you have to watch the doc. Maybe you have already.
I haven't yet. No.
Everything about it. I mean, what I love about those kind of movies is it's all about, you know, I mean, I love the films anyway on their own in isolation, but it's the whole story behind them as well. And in that particular instance, you know, it's kind of, you know, Buddy Cooper, the director, is the one film he made, and you know, it's just a real labour of love, and it remains a huge part of his life. And so for me, it's, you know, it's the whole thing. It's not just what's on screen, but the story that went behind it, you know, the love and care and dedication that went into it. And you see that replicated over a lot of these kind of regional US stuff, which is why, you know, a big part of why I find them particularly so fascinating, and why it's so rewarding you know, getting to re-release them and work with the people that re-release them.
It's such a weird time for horror cinema as well. Like the like in the early 80s would just seem to be the most bizarre kind of
thing. That's it. It was for 70s, 80s. It was, you know, it was a real just free for all. You know, it was, every man and his dog was trying to make a film. You know, and so you just end, you know, just everyone's having a go really, and that's why you just ended up with such a rich treasure trove of just incredibly idiosyncratic, off-the-wall films, you know. And that's why I just love that period. It's just such an incredibly fertile time for filmmaking. And, I don't want to say that, you know, that it's not like... Well, no, I mean, they don't make them like they used to.
No,
I mean,
they don't.
I will say that. it was just a very special time, you know. So
I think as well, if you grew up watching those films at the time... There's a kind of almost like a rite of passage that certain titles set up for you when you were like a lot younger, and if you grew up through the 80s, especially if you were catching these movies VHS late 80s, early 90s, I think from a consumer point of view, I think that's why companies that specifically look at these sort of genres will never be the biggest companies in the world, but will have hardcore followings. And I think that's one thing about the Arrow Facebook page, that where some people are negative because the artwork isn't the artwork that they would have had done for it or whatnot. It is an immensely positive group page when it comes to the excitement generated from new releases. Like new release day for Arrow, when you announce like a new slate for 3 months, 4 months down the line, it's nuts. Like people just go crazy, and there are titles that you as a company have released that I am not familiar with, but on the basis of what I'm seeing in comments and like that, how have I never heard of this movie? I need to do my investigation into this movie now. I now need to own this movie.
Give me an example of one.
Just recently you guys announced on the last slate Evil Ed.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Evil Ed. I don't know why.
Now, Evil Ed is I had heard the name before.
Yeah.
I've never seen the movie before. Never seen it. No, next to nothing about it. That dropped, and mostly Americans, mind you, but the comment section went wild.
Yeah,
just, like,
yeah.
Absolutely wild. That's like that. They're, generally, titles will be announced, and I have a very kind of methodical approach to things. I'm like, right, that's limited edition, I'm buying that, and then I'll maybe wait next month and then pick up another one because go for limited first. But that one was like, as soon as people started mentioning that, I was like, alright, I want that day one. I want that day one. I don't want to wait off a couple of months. I want that day one when it comes out. I want to see what everyone is so excited about. I mean, from your point of view, I don't know how much involvement you have with your Facebook group page. Are you one of the ones? Should I say that you're one of the ones responsible, or do you want to?
In terms of what do I like?
Do you check it out, or do you add it?
When I started, I was physically adding the uploading pack shots and stuff like that. Don't do that now, but obviously look to see what kind of response and comments, because often the feedback from fans is really really helpful. You know, I mean, I think you get like a deluge of, like, you know, so you're planning your release and, you know, try and get it to a pretty good state of readiness by the time you announce it, but sometimes the announcement will you know, you'll get a flood of emails from people getting in touch saying, you know, I have this or that about the film. I think somebody got in touch when we announced The Hills Have Eyes, who had a bunch of outtakes, and they got in touch after we'd announced, you know, what, because of the announcement. I got arranged with him to get stuff scanned, and it's like one of my favourite extras on the release, because it's like never before seen outtakes, and for me it's like that's one of the horror films that I know just like the back of my hand. So it was really surreal seeing different takes of stuff, or like lines said in different ways and things. So it's hugely important to monitor the feedback, both in terms of, you know, like what artwork people like, what people don't like. You know, what Evil Ed was one of my acquisitions, so I was pretty keen to see what the, you know, the,
yeah,
how, you know, how it excited people were about it, and also that, you know, people often give us pointers for stuff that, you know, stuff that we can add to the release that might have, you know, been aware of, whatever. So it's, for all those reasons, it's hugely important to, you know, keep an eye on the feedback.
One of the last questions we're going to ask you, one, got maybe two left, but you as a company are putting out this year my favourite horror movie of all time, The Thing. That has the potential to be like one of the biggest releases, I would imagine, for your company, in that it has such a high stature and held in such high regards. Now, you have put out in the past collections of material from like Wes Craven or Argento. Carpenter stuff seems to be quite spread out. There's the Indicator label just recently put out Christine.
A lot of that stuff is with Sony. So
And they have a relationship, I imagine, with Sony or from Sony. Or I can't remember. I remember reading something that said there's a linkage there.
There's a link.
Yeah. From your point as a company, is it easy to acquire, like when you have certain names like Carpenter or you know the larger names within genre? Is that easier to acquire? Is it are they more likely to be with studios? So, for example,
the bigger titles,
So something like The Thing will be with, well, I would
Universal,
imagine, with a studio. Argento stuff less likely to be with a.
Can't even think of the Argento stuff.
Because you see, for example, when The Thing was announced, there was comments where, oh, I really hope that Arrow put out this title. I really hope, you know, other John Carpenter titles. And I take it in the back of my head, because you have done in the past, like. Big Trouble in Little China. I know that Assault on Precinct 13 was second sight. So it's not for lack of trying. It's just a case of, you know, it's not as if you guys are sitting there saying, oh, well, we've got this John Carpenter movie, that's great. Well, I'm not really interested in getting more John Carpenter. Case of, it's just for clarification.
If we could have done The Thing 3-4 years ago, obviously we'd have done it. I mean, that comes back to what I was saying about studios and you know, that it's not, you know, there's a rigmarole that you have to go through. You know, it's not just kind of like, oh yeah, we want The Thing, we'll pay this much, great. You know, it's just not that straightforward.
Are there certain titles from your point of view that you will not give up on trying to get?
I never give up.
Right, so you never give up. That's all I hear. Sometimes no for now. Is it a case of you wait to see if people at certain studios move on to other jobs and then try with someone else, or do you have like a I'll try once a year approach, or if I send them an email every single week for the next year, maybe they'll cave? Or is it do you have a feel from being in the job for the length of time that you have that this one's I could probably fight for this title?
Unless there's like a really definitive reason why we can't get it, like it's already been licensed somewhere else, you know, all kinds of things. Like there was one that I was really keen on doing. I was told that we might. There was kind of complications with like residual payments and stuff like that.
Right.
And it's like,
at that point, you don't want.
Well, I just wouldn't. It's just such an unknown, that kind of thing. You know, I mean, it's. The person that's licensing you the film needs to be able to say, you know, guarantee what you're kind of getting to. With something like that, I mean, you can't really. There's other situations where there's a few where, and this is not uncommon, like the rights holder might say there's some sort of legal snafu, or there's something that they need to be, you know, the copyright isn't as clean as they want it to be, they need to do more research, whatever, you know. I'll keep you know, chasing them every week, maybe, you know, sometimes I might comb through my outbox to see what I haven't had a reply from in a while, you know, unless there's something like a really definitive reason why, you know. I mean, the same in all areas really. I mean, I recently got the brush off from an actor's agent to get an interview with them for an upcoming release, and they were just like, you know, I go by the kind of 2-3 strike rule, you know. They say no, and say, well, you know, give a some sort of reason or an impassioned plea as to why it'd be good. Then, you know, normally the second or third no, you have to just be like, well, you know,
that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, there'll be a time limit for special features as well, I would imagine, at a certain point, to try and get, once you've announced the title, do you already, because I know in the past there have been titles announced, these are the features, and then there's an update because something else, like you were saying before, where someone says, oh, I've got these outtakes or these deleted scenes, that you get the opportunity to then add them in.
Yeah.
When you come to announce a title, is most of it already locked in then? Because there is a tight timescale, tends to be about 3 months, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Announcement to release. Are a lot of those things locked in? You've already done interviews with actors, or producers, or directors, etc., in advance, or is that we can announce it because we now know it's coming out at that? This is our street date.
Yeah.
Got a couple of things to tie up, but that's our street date, so we can.
Yeah. Generally, now we wouldn't announce something unless we've got at least stuff in the can. You know?
Yeah.
Whatever we announce is in the can.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't mean say that the door's closed for like doing a few extra bits should the opportunity arise.
Yeah.
Again, like Hills Have Eyes, I think there was like we ended up doing like a cast commentary, and that was only possible last minute because that's when the convention was happening, that where there was going to be a Hills Have Eyes reunion. So, you know, sometimes, you know, hold out in that kind of instance. Yeah. But yeah, pretty much now we try and have as much ready as possible. You know, there's always going to be cases where something comes in last minute that you find out about or whatever, and you don't want to. I mean, I think in the case of like Raising Cain, we acquired, there was kind of a fan went and did a kind of a recut according to De Palma's original kind of.
I watched it last week actually.
Yeah.
Incredible, like really just makes it completely changes the movie, and is one of the ones that I did get a chance to check the doc out, and the documentary is fascinating, that, you know, this fan did something that the director himself was like, you know, De Palma was like, yeah this should go out with any Blu-ray, you know, he enjoyed looking at it that much. That one was a really cool entry, because you guys have already done quite a lot of De Palma. De Palma's one of my favourite filmmakers of all time, and that's one of those ones where, like, all the John Lithgow performances in the De Palma movies, circa the 70s, 80s, are great, but that for a while there was the elusive one, you know, it's just where he's like the ultimate villain, and crazy in that performance. So to get a feature like that is really cool, because you're essentially getting another movie along with the release, which I thought was pretty incredible. You've got, like, obviously up to, we said, I think it was May as announced.
We just announced May this month,
so not even halfway through the year yet. Lots of exciting things still to come that you can't tell me about, you can't even acknowledge.
No, I mean, there's the stuff that you know about already, like The Thing, the Romero's Crazies, and Season of the Witch. Something that's very big for me that we may be teasing for certain reasons in the next few weeks, even though it's not due to be announced in the next month, that we might be teasing.
Oh, excellent.
So that's something to look out for.
I will do. That's you've been fairly suspicious there. I like it when you're fairly suspicious, because it keeps me on my feet. But the only other thing I would ask before we wrap up this, because I've taken up quite a bit of your time and greatly appreciated, is that moving forward, Arrow obviously is going to continue covering the bases of European and American cinema, but you guys have, like, historically always had a strong eye towards Asia, And there have been some Asian titles recently, particularly horror ones, I'm thinking like Audition, Dark Water, etc., that have started making their way through. Is that something the company's still going to actively pursue? Because it is, I still feel it is a particular area of horror specifically which is woefully underrepresented in Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Is that something?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously I'd love to do the, you know, the Ring films.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about, you know, stuff that, you know, Asian horror that I'm a big fan of, like One, you know, One Missed Call, and even stuff like Phone, I think it's really good, you know, I mean, so yeah, all that kind of stuff, you know, stuff that kind of like Tartan put out over here.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because Tartan Asia put them out in the UK.
Yeah.
I don't know if Tartan Asia still exists as a company. It's certainly not something I'm familiar with. So I don't know how, because they put them out on DVD at the time as well, and as well as VHS. So yeah, it was just a curiosity, because like I say, it gets very exciting when, especially when Dark Water was announced, and that print is immaculate. It's like a gorgeous movie to look at, and it brought out so much more. I'd only ever seen it on VHS, so to see it on Blu-ray, it just blew my mind, because the cinematography was not something I'd even considered in that movie. I just remember it being a creepy movie, and then sitting down to watch it on Blu-ray going, this is gorgeous, you know, looks incredibly creepy, the aesthetic of it, it's just fantastic. Thank you very much for your time.
It's all right, it's a pleasure.
Always a pleasure speaking to you. We will definitely catch up with you probably somewhere down the line this year after the myriad of fantastic releases which will be announced in the coming months. I can't wait. It's always exciting to see that. But thank you very much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been a very special bonus episode where I interviewed Ewan Cant from Arrow Video. Fantastic chatting to Ewan. I believe we are going to try and hook back up in April. He's up for the Dead by Dawn Horror Film Festival. It's a film festival that I deeply love. I always try and get at least see one or two movies from the festival lineup here up in Edinburgh at the Picture House. So I'm very much looking forward to catching up with him then. Hopefully share a pint this time and not a coffee. My coffee was kind of getting pretty cold by the time that interview finished. It was epic. You know that way where you just start chatting to someone and before you know it, an hour of your life is gone. What a worthwhile time spending though. Honestly, chatting with someone who is madly passionate about genre cinema and works for a company that I think hands down, and I'm not just saying this just because we did an Arrow interview, you guys out there know how much I salivate over Arrow. I genuinely think they are the premier company in the UK bringing cult cinema and genre cinema to the masses, and some of the best packaging products I've ever seen. So yeah, it's fantastic chatting to him, and look forward to catching up with him in April. You also floated the idea of coming on somewhere down the line, not as an Arrow representative, but rather as a movie reviewer. We will be reviewing a movie together somewhere in the next couple of months. I'm looking forward to that. It'll be something likely quite grubby. Can't wait to get my paws stuck into that. So like I said at the start of the episode, we have posters. Please, please, please go and buy a poster. Not only are you helping the show out, which you are, that money goes back into the show, funds things like our website, our SoundCloud page. It covers a little bits and bobs that prop up during the year that generally I just pay because, like I say, it's a hobby and I enjoy doing it. But I would never ask you to give money through a Patreon account. I never ask you to put money into the show and not get something back, so you get that fantastic Joshua Kelly artwork poster. And it helps this show out immensely. Details of how to do that are in the show notes for this episode. I will be back in just a couple of days' time, back on Monday, with a return to some classic Teapot's fare. It's a double bill of Argento as we look at Trauma and Sleepless. Oh yes, I can't wait. And if I was going to do that, I'd have to bring back my buddy from Hello, This is a Doom Show, Richard Glenn Smith. Will be back on the show covering those movies with me. So get yourself set in the position of what the fuck did I just watch? Because both those movies are kind of crazy, but I'm not going to lie, kind of love Sleepless. I think Sleepless is a fucking woofully underrated Argento movie, just a woefully underrated horror movie. I think it's a great giallo, so can't wait to discuss those movies coming up on Monday. We are currently in the process, believe it or not, of recording the Baz end of year assessment. Now, it was previously advertised that we were doing it like Evil Dead, we'd have guest mentors in. Unfortunately, with time constraints being the way they are, essentially Baz has a small child that is consuming quite a lot of his time, and recent family developments over there have kind of shortened our prep time for it, so I've not really been able to secure what I wanted in terms of getting mentor hosts and all that over, so we're just going to strip this one right back. There's five movie reviews to do, and by the time you are guessing that you're probably talking about maybe like close to like a 6 or 7 hour show, that's a bit too long, so we're going to try and it back to 4.5 hours, because that's somehow more respectable. And we're going to cover the remaining Rob Zombie movies that Baz hasn't seen. That is House of a Thousand Corpses, Devil's Rejects, El Super Visto, the animated feature that he did, Lords of Salem, and then finish it off with last year's 31. So that episode will be coming up over the next month and a bit. Keep your eyes peeled for more information on that one. That one is going to be a doozy, ladies and gents, and sees the return of the Baz to the podcast Under the Stairs. Last thing I want to say before I go, when I say go, I mean download a huge amount of This Is How You Can Check Out the Show information. It's just to say that we, when I say we, I mean me, but I'm going to throw Baz in this as well because I sent Baz a text. But I sat down and checked the download figures for the first 2 months of this year and compared them to the first 2 months of last year, and we've more than doubled our listenership, which is insane. We are riding at like a massive high for the first 2 months of this year, and I think it's new members coming over, I think it's you guys sharing this show out amongst your friends and talking about us, and that's the best thing ever. I've said it before, I'll say it again, you guys make this show what it is, and I can't thank you enough for it. Thank you for all your support. Thanks to those that have been posting pictures of themselves wearing the merch. That's phenomenal, and I'm looking forward to seeing pictures of those posters as and when they arrive out there. They will be posted the day after this show goes live, so Saturday. So some of them should be making their way to you within a couple of days. The ones in the States, probably just over a week. I can't wait to see where those posters end up. As always, there are many ways to check out the podcast Under the Stairs. If you are checking us out through iTunes, it's the main hub that I push for checking out the show. I know not everyone is an Apple lover, but a lot of yous are. Please subscribe to our feed. That way you always get the new shows and you get access to our entire back catalogue of content for podcasts Under the Stairs. Whilst you're subscribing, please leave us some feedback over there as well. If it's 5 stars, for example, the more of them we get, the higher up the iTunes charts we're pushed, and the more relevant we are to people searching for new podcasts. It means the world to us, and it doesn't cost you anything. It only takes a couple of minutes of your time, and it greatly benefits the show. You can also check the show out on Stitcher Smart Radio and on SoundCloud. Please go across and check out our website, which is www.tputscast.com. The Baz is in charge of our twin prongs of social media sexiness, and that is over at Instagram and Twitters, which can both be followed at @tputscast. Yeah, that's the end of this bonus episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did recording it. I can't wait to come back on Monday with a double bill of Argento. But until then, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and whatever time zone you're in, please take care of yourselves out there, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll speak to you very soon. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from Under the Stairs, signing off.
Be ready, I'm coming for you! It's within instead of without. So much so, we have forgotten all about you. If we were to be sure, we had to save the doubt. But now you know, there is a plan in place which appeals to the villain of all of you. Yeah.
peace within emanates without. So much so, they could never force it.